would have to put the canyon into an idle mode and run coal runs in those quarterly exercises of our personnel and equipment.
What does it mean by shut down an L area? Is that somehow impact the waste that's currently in an L basin?
What it would really do is minimize the proliferant materials that are coming into the site. And in worst case scenario, there would be very little ability to receive research reactor fuel into the site. May not be completely shut down in L area. And what it really means is minimal waste receipts, minimal going in, minimal going out. And so we would not be moving fuel out of L Basin, and we would not be moving special nuclear materials out of K. So those operations really go more toward idle, safe storage and management.
So because of H Canyon, you can't move the stuff from it. Okay. So you would stop processing the vulnerable fuel that's in the L Basin?
Yes.
And what would you do about the Defense Board's concerns about all the rest of the vulnerable fuel?
They would not be a happy camper, nor would we. It would be a difficult situation because we've agreed with them that the SRE fuel is vulnerable, and which is why we put it highest priority to be processing it. We would have to, while we would not be having a lot of activities going on, we would have to include the SRE fuel that's in the basement in our enhanced observations, making sure that we aren't seeing any signs of fuel degradation.
Can you start moving fuel to dry cask storage if you can't?
We don't currently have the funds to expedite that. So
we'll continue to spend tons of money on the water chemistry and watching the fuel.
We will.
More now? Done.
Thank you. Dr. Moody, in your presentation, did I hear you say that in previous years when cuts have been handed down to the site, that they, along with those cuts, came flexibility to move funding around?
That's correct. Often that's correct. In recent years, we've not had that flexibility.
When the cuts come down, it comes down from DOE, or does that come down actually from Congress?
It comes down through the congressional hold points, and so it comes down through Congress.
So it was in previous years Congress that gave you the flexibility to move that funding around, or was it some department within DOE that made it okay for you to move the funding?
I believe it was Congress.
Okay, thank you.
Vince. You mentioned Tank 16. What's left to be done in Tank 16? In terms of cleaning, because you know that was fairly well cleaned out.
I don't believe there's anything left to be done, Terry.
We recently had a meeting with the regulatory agency, South Carolina DHEC and EPA, to discuss the completion of waste removal in Tank 16. They had some comments. We had presented our basis basically then, meaning that the tank is clean sufficiently for closure. We did have some comments, though. We're currently addressing those comments, and we are going to do that within our schedule. We should have an answer within the next 30 days. We should be doing feedback. We believe that we're completed with planning and tax system.
Okay, because you mentioned 12, and I would have thought that there would be something other than with I mean, I think Dave mentioned, let's see, 5, 6, 18, 19, certainly, but 12 16 is sort of a non-brainer. Is there something else that's going?
I'm a little confused by your question, sir, but Tank 16, we're completed. We believe we're completed. There are some comments on our basis, and we're working those currently. Tank 12, we're working on chemical cleaning to complete the cleaning of Tank 12 in preparation for future closure. So two separate issues there.
It's just as in my attempt was to communicate that we would be closing and grouting 5 and 6 this year, and that 12 and 16 were the next ones on the horizon. If we have funding to continue to move forward in pairs, then the next two would be 12 and 16.
Thank you.
I just have a couple. Tom, thank you for all those questions because you got most of mine. And I don't want to sound like I'm playing favorites, but if we're using the new, y'all are going to use a new solvent in ARP-MCU, if you found money for SCSX, would you still, it seems like you're getting a lot processed with just ARP-MCU, and if SCSX, that small column ion exchange, came online, do you still need SWPF? Are we, that's the wrong question to ask. Are we investigating getting the tank waste processed somewhat on the schedule that we had originally agreed to?
We are evaluating all of our options for achieving the end point of that schedule. We may miss some of the middle points. We may not have tanks cleaned in the middle of our set of milestones for when we're cleaning tanks, but we're looking at what options would allow us to meet the final regulatory milestone of being out of the 22 tanks or 20.
And I guess I'm trying to be fiscally responsible, and it seems like, I hate to say this, salt waste processing is a very expensive proposition. If we could get it done with less money in almost the same time frame, that would be my choice.
With salt waste processing and next generation of solvent in salt waste processing, we're talking about upwards of 12 million gallons a year. And if we were able to execute salt waste processing and bring it forward to the 2017-like time frame, or even 2018, then that 12 million gallon capacity gives us the benefit, so it's worth it.
Given we get the money for it.
Right.
Are these cliffs we're falling off of, is it going to affect the H-tank farm, that 3116 discussions with NRC? Is it going to slow that process down?
I don't believe so.
Okay. And my last question, Hanford has all these leaking tanks. Big surprise. I am concerned, because I'm always concerned, that Hanford is the squeaky wheel and gets the money. So like Tom's question, move that over to the tank closure. Do we need to do something to remind our delegation that we have tanks here, too, that need closing, and that we actually have a process and have done some?
I think that we don't celebrate our successes as well as we should, and I've made it a policy to initiate all of the discussions I have with our delegation and staffers for our delegation to really celebrate our successes. We are actively emptying tanks. We have either emptied or in the process of emptying 15 tanks. We generated a record number of glass canisters last year, 277. We are dispositioning our high-level waste. We are actively dispositioning our high-level waste. We have had leakers in the past, and we have emptied those tanks or reduced the material in those tanks below the leak point. We have no material in a leaking tank. We have a tremendous program that evaluates the tanks. Most of our tanks have a space between the tank and another boundary before it reaches the environment. We're monitoring that, and so I believe we have been fiscally responsible. I think we are actively reducing our risk, and yes, I do believe that should be rewarded.
So my comment to you is, if you need help reminding people, that we would be glad to help.
I would appreciate if you believe that we have a successful program reducing risks, that you celebrate with us and communicate that as well.
Okay. Seems like I had one more question, but I can't remember what it is. Oh, well, never mind. Other questions? Thank you, Dr. Mooney. I appreciate it. Okay. I think we are to the public comment part of our meeting. We have four people who signed up to make public comments. Bye, Dr. Makachani. Thank you so much. First on the list is Tom Clements.
Thank you very much. I am Tom Clements, and I'm back with the organization Friends of the Earth since I last appeared before you. I'd like to say a few things about several subjects, primarily the issue of consolidated spent fuel storage, but I just wanted to make a comment. You're probably aware of liquid high-level waste from Chalk River in Canada that potentially could come here. There have been a number of articles about it. I have some concerns that Canada's basically dumping off a high-level waste problem, but I just wanted to mention also that the Global Threat Reduction Initiative, and they have responded to some questions I've had, are investigating management and possible bringing to the United States of, and this is the first time I've mentioned it publicly, and there hadn't been anything in the media about it, though I expect there will be, gas reactor fuel that's in a facility at Jülich, 250,000 graphite balls of gas cool reactor from maybe the mid-70s, which are already packaged in castor containers, and the Germans don't know what to do with this stuff. I'll have more to say about that later. The mixed oxide fuel program, and I think Germany, just to go back to that, I think they're basically trying to get rid of a waste problem. It's got some HEU in it. There's other fuel in Germany that has a lot more U.S.-supplied HEU that the U.S. should be looking at, not this stuff from Jülich that the Germans don't know how to well manage. It's already packaged. I can give you some pictures of it later. On the MOX fuel plant, I'm still hearing there's going to be a 75% cut in the 2014 budget request. Everything I'm hearing is leads to that conclusion. Sequester, I don't really know, but it is absolutely stunning that billions and billions of dollars have been spent on this program, and it's now on the chopping block, definitely. It's another, not to the scale of Yucca Mountain, waste of money, but there's got to be some accountability about the way the Department of Energy spends money. I mean, this program, I mean, it's I think it's going to be on life support for good reason. And I think the Nuclear Advisory Council should ask some questions about who is responsible for making decisions that have led to spending billions and billions of dollars for programs that are canceled. But I haven't found out a lot about what's happening with sequester on that. Now, on the spent fuel storage issue, I just want to comment about the report we heard that was summarized to some extent. I saw that it cost $200,000 for that report, which is rather shocking to me. I'd like to know where the money came from. If whoever financed that, it would stand to make money from reprocessing, and I haven't heard it mentioned where the money came from. But I wanted to go over a few things. That report doesn't mention the cost of the MOX plant. Dr. Makachani mentioned it. I have a figure here from Areva from 2011, $25 billion. From the Department of Energy, 2009 for reprocessing plant, greater than $15 billion. Their report says that this wouldn't necessarily come from the federal government. That money does not exist. There's no interest in the utilities to do that. The report also totally ignores, if there were reprocessing, where the separated plutonium would go to. I searched for the word reactor or MOX. I couldn't find anything. I just, there's no conclusion on what reprocessing would lead to, except it cost a lot of money. And besides ignoring all the various waste streams that would likely end up here in South Carolina, it also didn't get into how much radiation is contained in initially the spent fuel coming from Georgia and South Carolina. That's what I took to be the first step. About 6,800 metric tons of spent fuel now, 20,000 metric tons from the southeast, then another 20,000 from the northeast to go into reprocessing, who knows. But it sounds to me like it's a mega dump that would be set up here, because legislation in Congress has not gone anywhere on consolidated storage. As far as the job impact, I've got the final environmental impact statement from the private spent fuel storage facility in Utah that's now, the license has been withdrawn. Approximately 45 jobs during the spent fuel storage facility operation. I mean, you know, that's why there's concern. These facilities would not create a lot of jobs. The DOE strategy document did concur that the once through fuel cycles will continue at least for the next few decades. Reprocessing is not on the horizon. And a report that just was released this week, signed off on by all the DOE labs, entitled Categorization of Used Nuclear Fuel Inventory in Support of a Comprehensive National Nuclear Fuel Strategy, says it is difficult to conceive a realistic or financially viable alternative nuclear fuel cycle in which the current inventory would need to be retained for reuse. In other words, you don't need this fuel, because if you want to do R&D on reprocessing fast reactors, it's going to be a lot more created. This study concludes, and it's quoting, that there is no compelling reason to retain any of the existing used nuclear fuel inventory for production recycling purposes in the future. It's all going to go to a repository. So bringing it here for consolidation and reprocessing, I don't see it in the cards at all. I don't think it's going to happen with legislation in Washington, even though an email from Areva states to the NRC October 23rd last year, Areva's plan is to submit a license application for a recycling facility in 2019, and they need the regulations for reprocessing finalized. I was on an NRC panel that addressed some of the regulations for reprocessing facilities. I don't think those regulations are going to be finalized. I think this is totally unrealistic. Energy Solutions, also in a communication to the, and I'm going to write this up and give it to you so you'll have all the URLs and the references. Energy Solutions document entitled Statement to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission on Reprocessing and Disposition of Used Nuclear Fuel says there are significant synergies between a consolidated storage facility and a reprocessing facility, and it goes on, they want a reprocessing plant licensed, and it sounds like this is in the short term. This is dated January 23rd, 2010. I think that's totally unrealistic. The governor has been getting a lot of letters expressing concern about not giving consent to a consolidated spent fuel storage facility. I think that's only going to grow. I think it's a bad idea. I don't think that the SRS community reuse organization speaks for the state of South Carolina or all of the Aiken community, and we may hear from some people from Aiken. I'm not sure about that. I'll leave it at that, but Ms. Patterson, I appreciate you encouraging me to write this up. I will do that. I'll put everything linked and cited in what I've just said and expound on some of my concerns about consolidated spent fuel storage here in South Carolina. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom. Thank you. Our next speaker actually is from Aiken, Lisa Darden.
Hi, I'm Lisa Darden. I live in Aiken, South Carolina. My dad moved down to work at the bomb plant, which is now SRS, about 50 years ago. And I moved away from Aiken, moved back. You know, I really love Aiken. Not so happy about what's going on, but I'm a horse person, and I've lived in a lot of nice horsey communities, and Aiken's probably my favorite. But I'm worried that if Aiken is chosen as an interim storage site for spent nuclear fuel, it will actually become a permanent site. I mean, interim storage is anything up to 100 years as defined by our government. So sounds like it's permanent to South Carolina to me. SRS has a long history of being behind schedule and over budget. How many times have we heard about layoffs and rehiring? And then how about the design and construction of these storage facilities? Are they moving beyond their intended use and time frame? Is their integrity in jeopardy? We've all watched the cuts, the rehiring, and if we used Aiken as a storage site, it would likely involve hundreds to thousands of shipments of dry canisters endangering roadways, cities, homes, and businesses. And according to the U.S. Government's Accountability Office in 2011, spent nuclear fuel is considered one of the most hazardous substances on Earth. So what I'm getting to you is this really bothers me, and I don't know everything about this, but I've been learning, probably as many of you have on this panel. So you missed a really good opportunity here. Mr. Alvarez come and speak. He came on February 28th, and he spoke in Aiken to over 100 concerned Aikenites. And Mr. Alvarez is a senior scholar at the Institute for Poly Studies in Washington, D.C., and an adjunct professor at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. He is considered one of the nation's experts on civilian and military nuclear programs. Between 93 and 99, Mr. Alvarez served as senior policy advisor to the U.S. Secretary of Energy. While in DOE, he led the U.S. teams in North Korea in 94 and 95 to secure spent reactor fuel at their nuclear site and was responsible for strategic nuclear material and asset management policies, and led the DOE's successful effort to establish a federal compensation program for sick nuclear weapons workers. He received 2 Secretarial Gold Awards. Guy's no slouch. So, in his talk, he told us the advantages of leaving spent nuclear fuel where it is and how important it was to build dry cask storage, because it did a number of things. It, instead of concentrating the spent fuel in a relatively small pool, these bunker-like dry cask storage things that you can build are far less susceptible to terrorist attack or geological disasters. So that impressed me. So let's see, what else do I want to say? Oh yeah, so even our own CAB says the plutonium disposition program should continue to be a major priority and emphasis. The disposition process for this material has gone on far too long, in excess of 10 years, and more decisive and definite measures should be taken. You know, we've got to start listening to our own advisory boards, or why do we have them? So, again, I think the government's way behind in funding. I mean, that's all we've talked about today. The timelines for safe storage are running out. Government agencies are constantly being derailed with where to store nuclear waste, from Yucca Mountain to the eastern states, derailing the selection process. Meanwhile, places all over the country are springing leaks. So I believe we need the cleanup at SRS. We need to store this stuff on site, not have it traveling all over the place. I mean, for goodness sakes, when we're back at our next fiscal cliff and we have to make a choice between paying Social Security and cleaning up for little Aiken, South Carolina, who's going to vote for cleaning up Aiken? Okay, so the next thing is the jobs piece. We're all concerned about that. Okay. In 2008, an economic profile of Aiken County and the economic impact of the equine industry done by the University of South Carolina Aiken School of Business for Greater Aiken Chamber of Commerce. Thank you. Revealed the following. The equine industry's economic impact in Aiken County tops $72 million. In total, 1,814 jobs in Aiken County can be attributed to the operations of the equestrian industry. The impact of equestrian industry on household income is estimated to be $19.71 million annually. The study also showed that the equine industry is the third largest industry group in Aiken. Hanford is a one-horse town. Aiken is not. There's a lot more at stake in Aiken if people start leaving because of the threat of leakage or more radioactive stuff coming in. So then, when people start leaving, think of the job closures, the business closures, and everything that would be lost. So I do not consent to the storage or reprocessing at Aiken. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. Next commenter is Jesse Young.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's my pleasure once again to learn a whole lot and feel like my head is just stuffed with facts. I just want to talk for a minute about what's going on in Aiken now. I'm not sure if you're aware of Juilliard in Aiken or if you're aware of the Juilliard School of Music in New York. They have created a satellite campus in Aiken, and we are in our fifth year of having the pleasure of having 50 of their finest students come and perform for us, especially in the public schools where there are thousands of kids who've never heard a lick on a violin or a jazz riff in their lives. And this Juilliard in Aiken is what I consider to be at the forefront of the future of Aiken. There's a cultural renaissance going on, and I know the governor last year gave an award to Juilliard in Aiken that she is very interested in it. My wife and I attended a fundraiser for her 3 weeks ago, and she said to us that it was the people of Aiken who put her first campaign on the map, that the people of Aiken had given, as she put it, a last name to Nikki who? So those people in the room with us there, my wife and I were actually able to communicate personally to the governor at that time our worries that the cultural renewal that she applauds and whom people who support that renewal also support her cannot survive the stigma of Aiken becoming the nation's nuclear waste dump. As I walked out of a performance last night, I have been privileged to carry equipment for the different performers, and I have was once a rock star, now I'm a roadie, and I'm in service to and glad to be in service to the students of Aiken County and beyond. We went to Allendale this year for the first time, and it was Savannah River Nuclear Solutions who put up the money for that outreach. And that was a lovely cross-cultural event. I was glad to be there, although my back hurt a lot afterwards. I'm not used to lugging this stuff anymore. I walked out of a performance and I talked to a couple from Woodside who asked me about Don't Waste Aiken, which is our group. There's 700 of us now taking a hard look at interim storage and reprocessing. And he said, you know, if I'm in Woodside, I got a beautiful home. If the shipments start, I'm out of here. You know about this, but I just want to put it in the record. Spent fuel recycling in the U.S. has created one of the largest environmental legacies of waste in the world. By the end of the Cold War, about 100 million gallons of high-level radioactive waste We're left in aging casts that are larger than most state capitol domes. More than a third of some 200 tanks, and I just read about this, and of course you all did, when the new Hanford leaks were discovered.